Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good, Justin. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I feel like we're almost at the end goal line for getting all of our paperwork together to travel to the UK. So there's been a lot of things in the news lately. There has been some updates on other cases that we've covered in the past. First is they found some remains up in New Hampshire, in the same area where Maura Murray was. They haven't confirmed yet at the time of this recording that it is Maura's remains, but it's promising. It's given the family some hope. Maybe they'll have closure. And on top of that, it's in an area where they had questioned people previously. So if it turns out to be Maura, they possibly have some leads already.
And for anyone who's forgotten, this case began on February 9th, 2004, when Maura Murray's car was found on Route 112.
So that's one big update. The next one, I think a lot of people have forgotten about this, but Robert Durst found guilty of first-degree murder for killing Susan Berman. That was more than 20 years ago. And as some of you might remember, there was the whole Beverly misspelling situation and his whole gaffe on the Jinx, where he had a hot microphone and he said stuff as, "There it is, you're caught. He was right. I was wrong. What the hell did I do? Killed them all, of course." Well, all of this made it to trial, and some of you might be thinking, well, it's about time, but this is how the gears of justice grind, and I think we finally have justice, right?
Well, and this is just such an interesting case because he seemed to have a lot of luck on his side.
Or money.
It felt to me like he had money and luck, but, you know, luck can run out, and I think that's what we saw with Mr. Durst here. His luck ran out. And there's something to people who feel untouchable, where they say and do things that are very risky for their freedom. And, well, That's what happens when you have cameras on you, when the evidence piles up. It really goes to show how important that the Jinx documentary was, because all of the groundwork for this guilty verdict, that was all laid out in that documentary.
Yeah. The producer of the Jinx, he's not done yet, is he?
Yeah, I recently watched an interview with one of the producers who said that he has never stopped filming or following Robert Durst. So I guess in that regard, we might see more content down the road.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
So tonight's case, Aaron. Woo. Let's just say that I just want to give a little disclaimer to people. This is a brutal one. And I don't want to shy away from some of the details because I want people to understand what happened that night. I want people to understand why the justice system came down so hard on the perpetrators of this crime, because there's things that happened here that made me cringe, and that takes a lot. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight, we're talking about the March 1st, 2008 murders of members of the Caffey family in Emory, Texas. Justin, who were the Caffeys?
They were a God-fearing Christian family. Mother Penny Lynn Caffey was 38 years old. She was a talented seamstress, substitute driver for a local charity. She delivered meals to the elderly and indigent. She enjoyed singing in a gospel group, the Gaston Singers. Her friends said, "They were like family to me, the best people you could imagine." They enjoyed cooking together. She would bring food to the church after Sunday services. And her friend Jeannie Dunlap said, "Unless she was sick, she didn't miss one service." Matthew Ryan Caffey, he was 13 years old. He was also known as Bubba. He was in the seventh grade. He played harmonica and bass guitar at the family's church. Tyler Paul Caffey was 8. He was in fourth grade at the time. The father, Terry Caffey, he was 41. He had met Penny at a revival meeting in Garland, Texas. She was 21 at the time. He was 24. Terry worked delivering medical equipment to home healthcare and would preach at sermons at the Miracle Faith Baptist Church. He was on the threshold of becoming an ordained Baptist minister and was looking forward to ministering others. The daughter, Erin Michelle Caffey, was 16 at the time. She was brought up in this conservative family. She was homeschooled. The family moved a few times, which messed up her friendship circles and she had to change schools and churches. But in eighth grade, she started attending public school. Her parents had a bit of a freak out because they learned that another girl at the school had tried to kiss Erin. And they reacted by pulling her out of school. At 16, she got her driver's license and an old Chevy pickup. She was working at Sonic, and her coworkers would say she was so sheltered. It was like she was seeing the world for the first time.
And what's one of those things that happens, Justin, when a child feels sheltered, but then they start getting opportunities to spend time around their peers?
I think they can go crazy myself. I think they can just go buck wild because they never had a chance to enjoy their childhood. And they can definitely fall into the wrong crowds because they're trying to rebel.
Well, I think another aspect of it too is if they feel like they're sheltered, it's probably because the parents feel like they're giving them the best opportunity to live a clean, godly life. But, you know, there are temptations out there. Sometimes those new things that pop up, like kissing a boy, become very exciting because it's something that was never on the radar until it happened, really. You know, you have some boy giving you eyes and touching your leg or whatever. This is probably something that she just really wasn't ready for, but was ready for, if you know what I mean. Her parents didn't talk to her about this stuff, I imagine, but this ends up happening. There's a church fellowship meeting where the youth director saw Erin making out with a boy. And of course, other kids had already witnessed this. And her parents weren't very happy to hear what happened. So they quickly separated the two. And her dad said, "You're not going to see that boy no more." But Erin thought she had a new boyfriend. But of course, the parents, they don't want her doing this anymore. And so they don't want her going to public school. But she wants to go back. She wants to go to public school because her brothers are going to public school. So she feels like she's being punished unfairly. But her parents, they have a vision for how they want their daughter's life to be.
Erin would end up meeting Charles James Wilkinson. He went by Charlie. He was 19 years old. I know that's only a 3-year difference, but when somebody's outside of high school dating somebody that's still in high school, it's a world of difference. Back then, I remember just dating somebody that was in a different grade in high school seemed like a huge leap. So obviously, her parents are not going to be happy about this. What do we know about Charles?
Charlie's the kind of guy that when he shows up, Erin's parents aren't very excited. They see a guy who looks like he's broke, not well put together. I know the media described him as not being polished, but of course, they got to meet him and then they started looking into him and they found his MySpace page where he went by the name Hillbilly. And essentially, they could see that he drank alcohol and was partying and maybe being a little graphic sexually in terms of his language. So they saw him as a big red flag.
Yeah.
Now they met at Sonic just before the start of his senior year. And he had gotten home from boot camp. He was with the Texas National Guard. He lived with his dad and stepmom, a stepbrother, a stepsister, and a half-sister. He was also an avid hunter, so he really liked going after wild hogs and fishing.
He didn't have any history. He had never been arrested before. He hadn't even seen any serious disciplinary action at school. People thought that he was hot-headed, and it was easy to get a rise out of him. But for the most part, he didn't have any history of violence.
But the two are smitten with each other. And it's said that Charlie was nervous to ask her out, but he did. She instantly said yes. She wanted to date him. And so they sort of hit the ground running. But there are rules. You know, again, this is a very strict conservative family. They already don't like what they see of Charlie. So they said, look, you two can go on dates and things, but you're not going alone. But you know how it works. You can set the ground rules, but teenagers, they're not going to follow all these rules, are they?
No. That's what teenagers are best at, is breaking the rules.
So they're good at finding those 20-minute, 30-minute times where they can be alone. And another sign that these two were crazy for each other was there were set times where Charlie had to leave. You know, it's 9 p.m. Okay, Charlie, you got to go home. Okay. So he would go home, but then once he did get there, he and Aaron would talk on the phone, which sometimes that was an hour long before, that was an hour long call before she was told, okay, you're done with the phone for the night. But Charlie seemed to want to extend an olive branch of sorts. So he started attending their church, the Caffey's church, Miracle Faith.
Yeah. He's trying to make a good impression. Maybe it's just an excuse to be around Aaron more, but hey, it's a good foot forward.
So what this case is so far is, at least for many on the outside, this is a case of puppy love. Aaron Caffey and Charlie Wilkinson. Yet, according to Aaron's family, this is a guy who they're not real fond of, but they know Aaron's crazy about him. And they're trying to ride that fine line between, here's the structured life that we want for our daughter, and here's the life she seems to want. There is some compromise going on, definitely with her parents. But this can only go so long before something breaks. And in this case, well, Aaron is fearful that her parents will make her cut Charlie off. They've done it before, and now this situation is probably even more risky. So the writing could be on the wall.
February 21st, Terry's father passed away. Terry had gone to visit his dad, but he didn't come to the door. Terry went around the property and ended up using his spare key to let himself in. He would end up finding his father dead. He had passed away from natural causes, and sadly, there wasn't enough money left behind to cover the funeral. So Terry and Penny did what they could to have a burial for Sonny, his father.
We talked about how the whole family participated in music at their church, and they performed Amazing Grace at this funeral. But something happened that was noticeable, which is the whole family's playing their parts, but Aaron, where normally she would sing and steal the show in terms of, you know, her performance, they said she was a gifted vocalist. They could tell her heart wasn't in it. Is it because her grandfather's dead? Or is she thinking of something else that's distracting her?
This has put a lot of pressure on the family, the passing of the grandfather. And at this point, they're telling Aaron that she needs to break up with Charlie.
Yeah, I mentioned that they had looked up his MySpace profile. This came about in February because Penny was told by her sister, you need to look at Charlie's MySpace profile. And when they really got a look at it, wow, he was talking about how he was having sex, getting drunk, things like this. And they just said, no, not with our daughter. This isn't the kind of person we want associated with our family or Aaron. So both the parents came down on her and said, it's over. It's over now.
Aaron's telling her parents that she's going to break it off with him. Meanwhile, she's on the phone with Charlie. They're having some tough conversations, but not exactly breaking it off. Said that Charlie talked to some of his friends and said he wished that he could get her pregnant so that her family would have no choice but to accept him. That seems pretty disgusting to me. But Aaron, she's only 16 years old, so she's telling him that she's way too young to have a baby. Charlie seems to accept this, and it's said that Aaron had him around her finger, and she could get him to do whatever she wanted. If she asked for something, she got it. So I'm not sure who wears the pants in this relationship, but friends are saying that Charlie will do anything for Aaron.
February 29th, 9:30 in the evening, Terry arrives home after a day of work, and his wife greets him outside. This is just tradition between the two of them. When he goes into the house, his kids are watching a movie, and Penny had his dinner ready for him. And she went upstairs so she could read. But before she went up there, she kissed her kids goodnight, her boys. And then she stopped to talk with Aaron. And she asked her, "Are you sure you gave Charlie back all his things?" The answer was yes. But then Penny said, "Well, I found his dog tags earlier. Remember, he's in the National Guard." Aaron's response was just to grin. So Penny said, "You need to give them back to Charlie." And she kissed her daughter goodnight. Terry finishes his dinner and he makes a mess on the floor and slips and falls. So all the kids start laughing at him. And he said, "Do you think that's funny?" And he threw a pillow at Matthew. And, you know, he turned it into something fun. Some people would blow their top at a point like this, but this is just the kind of dad he is. So he kisses his kids goodnight and goes up to bed.
The last thing this family did together was have a pillow fight, and everybody was laughing and having a great time.
And he allowed his boys to stay up late so they could finish their movie.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
This is March 1st, 12:30 in the a.m. Terry wakes up. He hears their black lab, Max, barking. And this isn't that unusual, but, you know, it's jarring enough to wake up in the middle of the night to hear your dog barking at something and you don't know what it is. But he's awake at this point. The dog stops barking, and then he hears a door flying open and hitting the washing machine. So they know that the door to their house has been busted through. He starts hearing what he describes as explosions, but it's really gunfire. And he sees a man come into his bedroom, and he thought it was a robbery. So he actually threw himself over Penny to try to protect her. And more gunfire rang out. He got shot in the wrist and in the shoulder. Then he gets shot in his right cheek. This knocks him down. He heard this intruder come over, and he's like standing over Terry. The intruder kicks one of his feet to see if he's still alive. And then he hears 2 clicks, and that's the shooter reloading. I mean, this is just very methodical. And he says, "Lord, please take me quickly." At this point, he hears his wife, Penny, crying out, "Where is Terry? Where is Terry?" And he can't move, but he can see what's going on. And he sees now that there's two intruders, and one of them has a sword. And he sees this man stab his wife in the neck with this sword. And he has to sit there and listen to the blood gurgle as his wife is breathing and slowly dying. Then these men leave the room, start going upstairs towards his children's room. He's trying to get up. He's trying to go protect his children, his sons, his daughter. But he's messed up. He's been shot multiple times, once in the face. And he slips on his own blood. He's able to get sort of onto the bed. And that's when he hears his son, Matthew, yelling from upstairs. And Matthew is saying, "Charlie, no, don't do this. Why are you doing this?" At that point, Terry recognizes a familiar name, Charlie, and he knows that this is his daughter's boyfriend.
Should have been ex-boyfriend.
You would think. And maybe that's something flashing through his head is, well, she broke up with him. Maybe he's mad. I don't know. But he knows who these intruders are now, at least who one of them is. And then he hears a gunshot, and he doesn't hear Matthew anymore. Then he hears these men go down a hallway to Aaron's room. And that's where his other son, Tyler, is hiding in a closet. He doesn't know exactly what's happening, but his best recollection is that they're taking turns swinging this sword at his youngest son,
who's just 8 years old.
He assumes Aaron is killed during this time because he no longer hears any more noise from the upstairs. And he falls off the bed onto his dying or dead wife's body. He's seen enough. He's endured enough. He doesn't know what's going on. He just knows that his entire family is dead, and he passes out.
So when he came to, he's coughing. He's starting to get really hot.
He's trying to understand what's going on, and he quickly realizes that his house is on fire and he needs to get out. He somehow made his way out of the room and into the bathroom. He got into the shower, and he knew that there was an open window there. So he pushed hard and crawled his way out, and he was able to fall to the ground. His neighbor lives 400 yards away, 4 football fields through pretty wooded area. And he is dragging himself on his stomach. He'll get up, try to take a few steps, and then just fall back down.
So he's just trying to reach the neighbor.
Yeah, he's just trying to call for help at this point. He finally gets to Tommy's house, who is his older neighbor.
Tommy Gaston.
And he gets to his door and knocks. And Tommy comes out and just doesn't even know what he's looking at. It's a man who's just covered in blood. He's covered in dirt and woods and debris and leaves. He's just a mess. But Tommy, he's going to call for help.
This call goes out at 4:20 in the morning. He calls the Raines County Sheriff's Office. There's an officer that takes the call named Charles Dickerson. Wasn't difficult to find out where the crime scene was because he saw a murky orange glow in the distance as he drove out there. The whole house was engulfed in flames. So now he has to call and get the fire department out there. You know, Justin, you described earlier where Terry knew what was happening in the house for the most part. So when this officer, the sheriff's deputy, is asking him questions, he's able to tell him what happened. And this is what he told the officer. He said, "Charlie Wilkinson shot my family."
This man's been shot like 5 times. been brutalized. I have to say, this takes me back to episode one, you know, the jury duty, where the man was shot multiple times, once through the face, once to the back of the head, survived, and then walked to his neighbor's house. But that neighbor was 20, 30 feet away. This man crawled 400 yards. It's unbelievable. It doesn't take long for these deputies to track down Charlie, does it?
No, they headed out to a blue single-wide trailer. And when they go into this trailer, they're going through it and they're seeing just piles of clothing, beer cans. You know, the place is a mess. So they come across Charles Wade and Bobby Johnson. These are friends of Charlie Wilkinson's. So they go to another room and there's a door frame that has a blanket, and they pull it back, and inside that room, they find Charlie Wilkinson, and he has a gun right on the floor beside him. They're not taking any chances. They have guns on him, and they're telling him, "We need to see your hands. Don't make any movements." They end up handcuffing him, and they lead him outside. They start interrogating him right away, Justin. They want to know if he had something to do with this, because according to Terry Caffey, Charlie was there.
Yeah.
So they're asking him, "Were you involved in this?" And he denies it. He says, "No, sir. I got drunk last night and passed out." They get him some more clothes, because at this point he's just basically wearing jeans. They get him some clothes and they prepare to take him away. But they're going to continue to look through this trailer for anything else of interest. They get a warrant. And as they headed towards a closet, there's a blanket on the floor that's kind of all piled up. They see some blonde hair. And at first they think it's just a doll, but they move the hair, and this is Erin Caffey. They ask for her name and she replies, "Erin." So now they found Erin Caffey. When they had talked to Terry, he just assumed she was dead. So they ask her, "How did you get here?" And she says, "I don't know. Where am I?" The only thing she's able to really tell them is that she's Erin Caffey.
They end up taking her to the hospital, and she's interviewed in the hospital trauma room. They're asking her all kinds of questions, what she knows. And she's saying, "Two guys with swords." She's saying, "You know, they're coming after me." They're not getting a lot of useful information out of her.
But they do believe that she's a victim. That's the feeling here.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, Terry was telling them things that made them think, well, maybe because she broke up with him, Charlie got upset and took his revenge out on the family.
Yeah.
And as part of that, he just took Erin with him when he was done.
And they ask her how she was able to escape the house. And she says, "Out of her bedroom window." That's a pivotal thing. So now the detectives have found Erin. Well, they go back and they let her father know that she's alive. And this makes him very happy, because he's thinking, wow, this is something, you know, terrible that has happened to us. You know, Erin and I can come together and work through this. This is God giving me one thing after my entire family is dead. It gave him hope and happiness knowing that his daughter was still alive.
A gift.
Now, because Erin's having so much trouble recalling anything that's happened to her, they're thinking she might be on drugs. They're thinking that she might have been given GHB or something like that to have blacked her out during this whole ordeal. So they do a drug test, and it comes back negative. But that's not to dismiss that it's a horrible, stressful situation that could have, you know, she could have just blacked out or, you know, canceled out.
But over a number of hours, as they're interrogating Charlie, he starts giving them information. And the story he starts painting involves Erin Caffey as the ringleader.
Yeah.
And Charlie tells them she was really pissed off that her parents wanted us to not see each other anymore. And he said, we could just run away. But he said, Aaron wouldn't hear of it. He said, Aaron wanted them dead. And this goes back to what you said earlier. Some people really believed that Aaron had Charlie wrapped around her finger.
Yeah.
So this is a possibility. After all, Charlie's talking. Aaron's not really talking. This could either be he's coming clean, he knows the gig is up, or he's talking and you know how it works. If you're the first person cooperating, well, things might go better for you.
Yeah.
You're now setting the narrative.
Oh, absolutely. And it doesn't take much for Charlie to start implicating a lot of other people too, such as his friend Charles Wade. He says that his 21-year-old friend needed money, so he offered him $2,000 to help him kill the Caffeys.
Now, this is important because they knew where they could find $2,000, meaning Charlie and Aaron knew where to find $2,000.
Her parents had a lockbox inside the house, right?
Charles Wade had a motivation here. He wanted custody of his 5-month-old daughter, but he needs to be able to pay the legal fees to make that happen. That's where the $2,000 comes into play.
Now, the investigators, they're still questioning Aaron, but she's acting like she doesn't know what happened. She's giving them, you know, kind of fragmented details. That's until they let her know that they have Wade and Wilkinson in custody.
Yeah, because they hadn't taken Wade or Johnson in right away. And so, again, this is a situation where Johnson didn't feel like she had anywhere else to go, but let's just tell them what I know. So with taking their accounts, they can compare the notes. And what do they find, Justin, when they compare the stories of all three, Wade, Wilkinson, and Johnson?
They're very consistent, and they all revolve around Aaron. Her statements are the only ones that are inconsistent.
Wade seemed to have the coolest head of all of them. He didn't seem to be as nervous as the others when being questioned and didn't seem to express any emotion when he was describing the murders he took part in. And before the interview was over, he said something else that no one else had told them. He said, as they were driving away from the Caffey's home that was on fire, Aaron yelled out, "Holy shit, that was awesome." So if there was any doubt about Aaron's part in this, hearing that, well, at that point, I think they're thinking she's the ringleader because she's the one that's not cooperating and everyone else's accounts are consistent. And now we're hearing that she was celebrating as they drove away after committing murder and arson.
So law enforcement's looking at Aaron and thinking, as soon as you're done with this hospital stay, we're going to be taking you into custody.
Aaron's grandparents had shown up. After all, I mean, who's going to help this family? Terry's in really bad shape. Aaron was being checked out. So the grandparents show up and they're informed that law enforcement will be arresting Aaron Caffey in connection with the murders of her family members.
The investigators also inform Aaron that her father is still alive. And the look on her face kind of tells it all.
This is a moment where it's a verification of sorts. And what they got out of that was she knows that if her father's alive, then he probably knows what happened.
She's been caught, and she knows it.
But Aaron's a juvenile, unlike the others, so she has to appear before a justice of the peace. She doesn't want to meet with investigators. She declines, so she makes a written statement instead. And what she writes down is that there had been smoke and strangers with swords, but that she really couldn't remember anything else. This doesn't even sound, Justin, like someone who had a real plan. We've talked before about how youth have this problem. quite often. You know, it's one thing to say, I want this, I need this, but to actually plan at a higher level where you can deal with adversity, deal with different situations. You know, if she was involved in this, like it seems like she was, yeah, she didn't give this a moment's thought. And that's why her story is so simple.
Yeah. I mean, she's a 16-year-old, you know, she's not a criminal mastermind. She doesn't know what's going on. She just knows what she wants. She wants it now. She wants her parents out of the picture. And here we are. The investigators will go back and inform Terry that they've taken some people into custody. They tell him that his daughter was taken into custody. While they're telling him his daughter is alive, he asks how she escaped the house. And they say that she went through her window in her bedroom. And this gives him pause because he knows that there's a window unit in her bedroom. And he doesn't think that she's strong enough to have opened the window and pushed that unit out. Investigators will later come back and inform Terry that they have people in custody, including his daughter. And this devastates him. All those feelings of hope, that gift that his daughter was spared, has now been taken away from him.
So they have a lot of information at this point. The sheriff's office does. And the Texas Attorney General's office is having to figure out how to proceed. And I find it interesting because the Assistant Attorney General, Lisa Tanner, made a comment. She said, "This was not the most brutal or cold-blooded case I had ever prosecuted." And she starts to go on about how all these different factors coming together give it more weight, make it more disturbing. But I don't know, Justin. This is pretty brutal.
It is. I don't know what other crime she's seen. I'm sure she's had her run of it, but this is one of the more brutal ones we've covered in a while.
Right. And I'm not saying she hasn't seen more brutal, but this seems brutal enough.
Yeah.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
There's some investigation that happens that really clears up the case for the investigators because, you know, you can take all the accounts, put them together and see how they all work. What does your gut tell you, et cetera? What does the evidence say? But it's the phone records that they find most useful here. And it shows that from 11:46 in the evening until 12:48 in the morning, Aaron called Charlie 6 times. And between 1:22 in the morning and 1:58, she called him 7 more times. This fits with what Charlie had told them because she kept calling and saying, "Where are y'all at? What's the holdup? Hurry up. Come back and I'll keep the dog quiet."
Yeah.
So for someone who's being kidnapped, it doesn't make sense that she's calling this many times. It doesn't make any sense. So they know that all the statements they took from Wade, from Wilkinson and Johnson, they make the most sense. Now, those three on May 7th of 2008 all pled not guilty at their arraignment. They find out that Wade and Wilkinson are looking at the death penalty.
Wow.
So brutal enough, I would say, right?
No, I mean, if there's ever a case for it, it's, you know, they definitely met the threshold.
Terry Caffey, is shown the phone record evidence. And this is with the assistant attorney general, Lisa Tanner. She's showing him the records. And she's trying to say, look, this is why we're trying to certify Aaron as an adult. This is tough because while Terry understands what his daughter may have done, because I don't know if he fully gets it. Because, you know, you have parents who can't go there with their kid. They can't fully accept them as a murderer. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know where he's at with all that. He has the information. There's no doubt. And now he's being shown that she was the one calling Charlie over and over again and being told, look, she's egging him on, pushing him to do this. And so we need to get Aaron certified as an adult so we can punish her properly.
Because she's a juvenile, she's should be getting life without parole, but a juvenile cannot receive the death penalty.
Right. That's the max is life without parole.
Yeah.
So it's 20 days later. It's decided that Aaron Caffey will be tried as an adult, and she's charged with the murders of her mother and two younger brothers. Her bond was set at $1.5 million.
Terry's at least agreed enough that she should be tried as an adult, but he doesn't want the other members of this party to receive the death penalty.
Yeah, he makes a statement that I felt was really touching. My heart tells me there have been enough deaths. I want them in this lifetime to have a chance for remorse and to come to a place of repentance for what they have done. And as many other people say, killing them will not bring my family back. I know some people would say these are the people that need to be put down, but I respect what Terry is doing here because it was his family that was destroyed. Yeah. It was his family who were cut down, shot, and stabbed. I don't think there's anyone more qualified to make a statement like that.
Exactly. He's the victim, so it's his prerogative whether or not he wants to forgive and move on. So how does this play out in court, Aaron?
Well, on January 2nd of 2009, both Aaron Caffey and Bobby Johnson pleaded guilty to killing Aaron's mother and her two brothers. So this means that at that point in early 2009, this is all been mostly played out in court. So you have all four who participated in these murders and these crimes, all having pled guilty. So Aaron was given two life sentences plus a third count of 25 years. She is eligible for parole. And if she were to be granted parole at the earliest available time, she would be 59 years old. Bobby Johnson got 40 years, and she will be eligible for parole in 20 years. You know, that would be 2029 for Bobby and 2034 for Aaron Caffey.
Now, what happened to Charles Wilkinson and Charles Wade?
Charlie Wilkinson and Charles Wade, they were both given life sentences without the possibility of parole. That's all part of their plea deals. So a lot of people wonder what happened after all this went down, because this got cleared up fairly quickly. Justice was swift here, and it seemed like a lot of people came clean within a day or so. So Max, who tried to warn the Caffeys of what was going on, he went to a new home, and Terry Caffey remarried.
Terry has forgiven his daughter, and he doesn't want anyone to think that she's a monster.
Now, why do you think he came to that conclusion? Do you think this is his faith at play here, or is it something else?
I think you just nailed it. He went back to the rubble of the burned down house and found a page from the Bible, and he interpreted that as a sign for forgiveness and a sign from God that he needs to live his life and love those around him, including his daughter.
I can't disagree again. I can't disagree with what Terry's doing because it makes sense for him. And we can all look at this and say, well, she did this, she did that. She was 16 years old. And I do wonder how she'll look at this whole situation given time. Because so often there are teenagers that make really bad choices. No one dies, but they're really bad choices. And I am in no way excusing what she did. I mean, she needs to pay for her crimes. They were disgusting. They were horrible, despicable. But somewhere along the way, it would be nice if, because of what her dad has done for her, that she becomes a better person. It's important to me. Just, it has to do with how much good is there in the world. Mm-hmm. I realize that there's a trail of bodies behind her, but there should be time for reflection and remorse. I think it's important. It's important for Terry. Maybe he'll see that and he'll feel a little bit more at peace, because what happened to him, that's enough to just shake you off your feet and never be the same again. It would be nice for him to be able to look in his daughter's eyes and know that she's back with him again, that she's turned the corner. Doesn't mean let her out. It just means, what's their relationship going to be like? Because it's one thing to be very forgiving. It's another thing for someone to truly change.
She's going to be spending a long time behind bars. As usual, multiple TV personalities reached out for interviews. Dr. Phil and Piers Morgan. It's said that Dr. Phil showed her pictures of her father's wounds, and it was the first time she'd seen them. He went through all of the details of what happened to her family, and she didn't seem to have any idea of the level of brutality that her father, mother, and her brothers faced that night. I think that's weird, because normally during trial, they put all that up for the jury to see. So I'm not sure how she missed this, but this interview was pretty emotional. There's a lot of things that Dr. Phil did that we'll talk about on the after show. So tune in to our Patreon if you want to hear our thoughts on that.
Charlie was later interviewed by the Texas Monthly, and he had some interesting things to say. And they sort of are consistent with comments that people had made about him that we talked about earlier. He was saying that when he was at the Caffey home, he could tell this was just the perfect family. They had the white picket fence and the pictures on the walls, always smiling, happy together. And I think it's times like that where he understands the gravity of the situation that he participated in. You know, it's one thing to say, I need to do this so I can be with the love of my life. And it's another thing to look back at the devastation and the true loss that occurred. And he spoke about Aaron, and I guess, according to Texas Monthly, he became very sentimental. And he said, I would have done anything for her. She was very smart, very caring. I don't know why she wanted it done, why it had to be like that, but she was a very nice person. There's something that happened, though, that he told the Texas Monthly about, which is weeks after he participated in the murders of the Caffeys, he found out from his own defense attorney that Aaron had asked a previous boyfriend to kill her parents too. And this boyfriend was the one that Aaron was caught kissing at their church. And it's at that point, Charlie said, it made him question a lot of things. So he got caught up in this, oh, we're in love, we can't be together, we have to be together, we've got to do something. And then he looks back and realizes she would have used anybody to get this done. So how important was Charlie? He was useful.
Yeah, he's just a pawn.
I'm not trying to say that Charlie is this innocent guy or that he should be forgiven necessarily. I think that's up to everyone to decide for themselves. I just like this because it shows that he has spent a lot of time thinking So if you believe in spirituality or just, you know, maturity, whatever it is, it does feel like Charlie has matured and has given all of this a lot of thought and has a much better perspective these days. He finishes by saying, once you love somebody, you can't quit. Now, we talked about this perfect family, Justin.
Yeah.
But Terry divorced his second wife and then married a third wife in October of 2013.
I think he's been through a lot, so I don't know. Establishing new relationships might be pretty hard for him.
It just goes to show, it's like Terry Caffey, Penny Caffey, they felt like they had this great life and they tried their best to steer their family in the direction they thought was most healthy. As we all know, Erin Caffey decided one day that her parents needed to die. And I would just go back to those phone calls that she was making to Charlie and just the urgency, the amount of push she was putting on Charlie, saying, you need to do this. Let's get it going. Where are you?
I mean, it's obvious. Yeah. And they questioned fellow students and friends, and it becomes apparent that this had been planned for over a month.
And it had been considered well before then.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, if you read about this online, if you're reading articles, whatever, you'll often see that people are asking the question, why would Erin Caffey want her family murdered just to be with a boy? And all I can say is, you know, when people are in love and they're young and dumb, well, you get the right people together and it goes from little mistakes to horrible choices.
Yeah.
Thankfully, most of these things don't end like this, do they, Justin?
No. I think that it's teenagers, you know, immaturity, impulsive behavior. There's a whole litany of things, possible mental illness. I know there's a lot of talk that Erin is a sociopath or a psychopath. People have tried to analyze her or diagnose her. I don't know if you can do that when somebody's 16, 17, or even 18 years old. I think teenagers and children can have very sociopathic behaviors, but it doesn't mean that that's how they are. That's just how they are at that moment. I don't know what kind of person Erin is. I don't know what kind of person she'll grow up to be, but this was a pattern of behavior that went unchecked during a large portion of her adolescence.
Check out True Crime Week on Stitcher, where they are kicking off the spookiest month of the year with the creepiest and crawliest true crime podcasts. Listen to The Generation Y and other true crime podcasts all for free on Stitcher. Also, check out their curated homepage to find your next true crime pod obsession. If you're on your phone, you can download Stitcher in your app store or go to stitcher.com. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.